thousands of shipping jobs on the First Coast could be at stake due to changes in Washington. Mayor Brown is out with his first campaign spot and his opponents pounce. And Mark Brunell says he doesn't believe Tom Brady. Some of the biggest stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross, and keep listening because we've got all the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. They're ready to discuss it all. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, our book club tackles race and reading in the River City. All of that ahead this hour. But first, it's Friday. That means it's time for our media roundtable here today. Mark Woods of the Florida Times Union back with us. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Jeff Billman, editor at Folio Weekly, is here.
Hey.
John Burr, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal, joining us.
Good morning.
And Eric Smith, former city councilman, and he hosts the local cable program, People and Politics. Eric, good morning.
TGIF, Melissa.
Good to have you all here. Lots of news to discuss from the week. A lot of news, but we're going to begin with a headline that appeared earlier this week in the Times Union reporting that Senator John McCain is proposing an amendment that could have a huge impact on this area's shipbuilding industry. It employs 10,000 people on the First Coast. Now, McCain is trying to attach his amendment, which would do away with the Merchant Marine Act of 1920, that's also known as Jones Act, to another bill that would permit construction of that controversial Keystone Pipeline. Now, the Jones Act says that all ships operating within the U.S. and between U.S. ports must be American-built, owned, and operated. McCain's proposal has sparked a firestorm from the maritime community in this area. Opponents say this could mean the loss of thousands of jobs and even affect national security. Senator McCain argues the law is outdated and is costing American consumers more in shipping costs. This is a bit arcane, but it does affect a lot of people around town. So we're leading off the roundtable with a discussion. 549-2937 to join the show or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us. Mark Woods, let's begin with you. You studied up last night on the Jones Act. Thank you for doing that. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, yeah, first of all, my long history of knowing about the Jones Act. Yeah, I felt like it was a pop quiz when I got the list of topics. I had read the story earlier the week that Cliff Davis did in the paper, but other than that, didn't know much. But yeah, it's interesting seeing both sides of whether it's a the shipbuilding industry argues that it decimate them. John McCain has argued that it costs $6 a barrel to move crude from the Gulf Coast to our Northeast, but if you take a foreign ship, you can do the same thing to a refinery in Canada for $2. So he's saying it's kind of silly and antiquated. One thing that struck me was the argument against it was that other governments, China, Korea, Japan, have this government help and subsidies, so it's unfair footing already. Mm-hmm. I remember that being an argument with car industry.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. Some people have said, no, we can't bail out GM. They should be able to stand on their own 2 feet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Have the flip side of this argument. So I know they're not quite the same, but there are some similarities.
Mm-hmm. Eric Smith, what do you think?
Well, I used to teach my students when I was a law professor teaching legislative process that there are many of the laws on the books, substantial portions of which hadn't been revisited for years, that were archaic. I also used to teach them that politics is like the hula. Every little bit has a meaning. So my first thought went to who was lobbying McCain. Not that lobbying is a bad thing. I've done some myself. But and where did this come from? Did it come out of the blue, or was one of the highly paid or more lobbyists urging that this happen?
That this happen.
And I think it cuts both ways. I think it's probably part of a free trade argument. There are many times when we've entered into free trade agreements with one or more other countries that it's turned out to be win-win for both sides. So I must confess that unlike Mark, I only skimmed the Jones Act last night.
John Burr, unlikely partners out of this, Andrew Crenshaw and Senator Bill Nelson are both saying this is a bad deal for Jacksonville.
Well, no doubt. I mean, it's not just the shipbuilders. It's the Crowley Maritime has a huge business going out of Jacksport, shipping things to Puerto Rico, as does Seastar, as does Trailer Bridge. I mean, you know, Jacksport would take a huge hit. if this actually came to being. And you know, Senator McCain ought to just mind his own business. He's from Arizona. He doesn't know anything about the shipping. He doesn't have a port. You know, leave us alone here. You know, we're doing fine. And, you know, I don't care how old the law is. The law works, and it works for us, so back out.
Yeah, but I got to say, McCain is not a bad guy. He was only a Palin away from being president of the United States, for goodness sake.
549-2937. Let's get your calls on this. Julie in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Julie. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I was going to comment that I feel like follow the money with Mr. Or Senator McCain, so I appreciate, I think that was Mr. Smith that brought that up. But I would say that this is a concern of national security. We have no more American flag international ships left. And I just find it hard to believe that we would give up our American flag because we couldn't compete against foreign companies who are subsidizing their ships. So we would have no more American flag ships left. And I just find that really a sad thing that we have no more international, then it would eventually this industry would fade out. And that is, those are American interests, and I think we should keep the Jones Act and keep our American flagship.
Julie, thanks for that. Thank you, Julie.
I don't think we need to be, I don't think the shipping industry needs to be that concerned with it. I mean, he's trying to attach this to the Keystone Bill.
Right.
Keystone Bill has a promised veto, which means the Senate needs to get 66 votes to override it, which is kind of a heavy lift to begin with, and you start tacking on amendments that will, you know, where the attack ads write themselves. I can tell you McConnell wants Keystone Pipeline more than he wants the Merchant Marine Act repealed. I don't see the Republicans climbing up on that cross.
Can I just weigh in with one more thing? I'm with Crenshaw and Nelson, particularly as it applies to Jacksonville. It's a huge industry here, and absent some phenomenal, compelling arguments to do something that would totally create an economic dislocation for those industries, and Jacksonville is wrongheaded.
Leilani in Arlington. Go ahead, Leilani.
Yes, I just want to give my own perspective of this. Growing up in Hawaii, it was really frustrating how expensive everything is because everything has to go from Asia all the way to California to get unloaded on a ship and then go back to Hawaii halfway across the world. So it just seems really unreasonable, and it hikes up the prices of everything there. And that's just my perspective on it as a Native Hawaiian.
Wow, that's an interesting point of view. Mark?
That was something I read repeatedly was Alaska and Hawaii say that's part of the reason goods cost so much there is because of the Jones Act.
Andrew in Avondale. Go ahead, Andrew. What are your thoughts?
Yes, my thoughts are, as far as McCain goes and the Republicans go, this just goes to show you, had the Republicans won or had McCain won, you know, they say they're the party for this and that and for prosperity, but McCain is one of the people behind the scenes, if you don't know. The Republicans have taken jobs away from this country, and that's just one other nail in McCain's coffin because he really doesn't concern. He's all about special interest groups. So I feel that, you know, that they should not pass. He should not hook this bill up. And that's my thought because McCain really, I'm glad he didn't win because it just goes to show you, had he won the Republican game, we would not have the economic prosperity and the growth in the economy that the Democrat has had. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Andrew in Avondale. For the senator's part, he's saying that there are free trade benefits to eliminate the Jones Act. Let's take one more call on this. Mike at the beaches. Hey, Mike, what do you think?
Hey there. I have a lot of friends who are merchant marine sailors, so I might be a little biased, but I think repealing the Jones Act would be a disaster, not only locally but internationally as well. One of the few reasons the Merchant Marine exists is because during wartime, merchant vessels activate to become U.S. military vessels because they're primarily shipping munitions. We can't have foreign vessels doing that. Also, it's about aid runs a lot of the time to impoverished countries and that sort of thing. So then the notion of dismantling the industry locally while we're talking about putting this huge Panamax dredging project on the table here in Jacksonville. It's just a bad all-around for our city and our community and in the international stage. It's a terrible idea.
And that's Mike at the Beaches. Thank you, Mike. And the number to join the show as we discuss the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable is 549-2937. Of course, John McCain ran against Barack Obama in 2008. Mitt Romney ran against him in 2012. Did want to make quick mention of the fact that Mitt Romney generated a lot of headlines this week. He's going to be JU's commencement speaker this spring. They've landed a big name at their campus.
They have, Tim Kost continues to have success putting JU on the map. Tim is the JU president. He's been there about a year and a half. Put about $20 million into the campus already and brought in some really interesting people to talk to the students. And that continues. I mean, I think It's a very positive thing going on.
Right. And give us a call as we discuss local politics right now, 549-2937. Mayor Alvin Brown's reelection campaign hit the airwaves Wednesday for the first time with his first 32nd spot in the reelect effort. The ad touts the mayor's follow-through on his campaign promises to cut government spending and hold the line on raising taxes. Take a listen.
As mayor, I'll cut my salary by 20%.
That's Alvin Brown. He kept his word. He cut his own salary.
He did it.
He cut waste. He eliminated dozens of government jobs. And Mayor Brown kept his word. He didn't raise taxes.
He kept his word.
Yes, you do what you say you're going to do.
He kept his word.
He's done it. He has not raised taxes.
Mayor Alvin Brown, making Jacksonville a better place to live.
Jacksonville Landing owner Tony Slayman made a cameo in that ad, by the way. That caught my eye. And, of course, the Lenny Curry campaign wasted no time attacking this ad, saying it's disingenuous, that there have been hidden tax increases on the public. We want your calls about the mayor's race, 549-2937. Jeff Billman.
I really find it funny that one of the mayor's sort of jumping off points for the campaign is, I fired a bunch of people. And
government employees,
dozens of government jobs. And, you know, I think the Curry camp, I mean, and we talked about this before the show, but the Curry camp kind of freaked out a little bit with this ad. They kind of took it up to 11 to use a Spinal Tap reference. But they just kind of went after this whole Slayman thing and over after the mayor for, on the I didn't raise taxes thing. And
I think we can expect to see that from now through the election. There's going to be a concerted effort for each of these campaigns to win the news cycle. Mark Woods.
Yeah, and I think that the tax question will be something that will be debated back and forth with Mayor Brown, saying I didn't raise taxes. And the opponents can argue, well, you didn't raise taxes, but you let somebody else do the dirty work for you, and then you used those. I think it's it's a legitimate argument. And then on the flip side, the Curry campaign, the I'm not a politician, I think that's legitimate to be questioning that and saying you were issuing very partisan political statements not too long ago leading the state party. So I think those are both going to be ongoing threads, just tug of wars to see which side can pull the other in that direction.
In that direction, yeah.
I can't wait to see these two guys actually meet face to face instead of debating the points.
By the way,
of
that's going to happen
electronic
here.
Campaign.
That's going to happen here at WJCT in March. That we're going to have a televised debate
right here on our show.
Nope, it'll be on TV.
No, I think that's when people are really going to start to zero in on the campaign because, it's kind of like debating Super Bowl ads here. I mean, it's kind of weird, to tell you the truth, this is all we got to work with right now. Why aren't these guys, out there, talking to people, real people, instead of just, talking to us through their television sets?
Well, to be fair, I think the candidates have been going around and doing a lot of shaking hands and speaking. Eric Smith... there's been a lot of money raised on both sides, and let's also not leave out discussion of Bill Bishop, the other Republican in the race, who served on, is still on the city council, which you served on. He doesn't have the backing, though, of the local Republican establishment. In fact, there was some discussion this week over the local Republican Executive Committee meeting as they decided who they were going to endorse for Jacksonville mayor. Jeff Billman, Eric Smith, there was quite a bit that went on at that meeting, apparently.
Yeah, the Republicans held a vote. Lenny Curry came up one vote short of the supermajority that he needed to win the party's endorsement. And so the chairman of the Republican Party, after a bunch of people had gone home, discovered that there were a couple extra votes and decided to have a do-over. Over Jerry Holland was there, the supervisor of elections was there to sort of oversee the thing and over his objections. So it's not the best way for Lenny Curry to get out of the blocks, I think.
But of course, the people behind Lenny Curry, Eric, they're trying to show that the local GOP has a united front, trying to coalesce everybody together. Bill Bishop's not playing ball with them on that. He's going to continue his campaign.
Absolutely, the Republican Party here has a united front, as does Vladimir Putin in Russia. I mean, that election was so unfair. I mean, it was just to let half the people leave and then put the three, you know how they're going to vote in there. I'm a little surprised at my friend Robin Lum that he let that happen
I was struck to see the quotes from Jerry Holland where he said he apparently told the folks in the meeting, no, this is not the proper way to go about this.
You don't do it this way. You don't do it this way. And he told them that multiple times.
Mark.
Well, I'm surprised it kind of played out like this. I mean, it wouldn't have surprised me 4 years ago when you had Rick Mulvaney, Mike Hogan, Audrey Moran, and you could see, who's going to decide. This time, clearly the candidate with all the money is, we have that lined up, and it's not Bill Bishop, but yet it wasn't quick and unanimous. So I'm not sure what to make of the kind of this.
That said to me that there is a block of support for Bill Bishop.
I think perhaps Lenny needs to reread The Tortoise and the Hare, mm-hmm. because this is going to help Bishop, and surprises happen in campaigns. This could certainly be one of them.
And even if Bishop doesn't make the runoff, the more stuff like this happens, I think the less likely it is that Bill Bishop supporters lift a finger for Lenny Curry,
and of course,
especially those within the party.
And in the end, all of this helps the mayor in his reelection.
Could it be that there's a pattern here? The Republican state chair resigns, becomes a non-politician, runs for mayor, then creates a united front by torpedoing poor underdog Bill Bishop. I mean, if you're going to fight the guy, fight fair.
Mm-hmm. Well, we want your calls on all the local political issues happening around town, 549-2937 to join the show. I'm sorry, go ahead, John.
Well, Lenny Curry doesn't want to fight the guy. I mean, Lenny Curry just wants everybody to realize that he has been anointed as the Republican choice, and he wants this little mosquito, Bill Bishop, to go away. Well, and Bill's not going away, so it's getting interesting.
Well, but, it's a unitary election. The two top vote getters will advance. A minute ago, you said you don't know if Bill Bishop will be able to make the runoff. What do you guys think about that? Can Bill Bishop get into the runoff? The conventional wisdom would say no.
Well, the money would say no. There's so much money elsewhere. But I do think consistently you see hot button issues in the last month or so, and the other two kind of try to carefully toe this middle ground of not taking a stance, and Bill Bishop at least is coming out
on everything.
Go on the record. Again and again and again. And I think he realized, is that because he realizes he has to, or does he? But it's refreshing to see, even if that's why, it's refreshing to see somebody taking a stance.
Right.
Let's discuss this. If you're Lenny Curry or Alvin Brown and you're being advised not to take a stance on a controversial issue because you won't win the election if you do, what if those advisors are telling the candidates you can take action on these controversial social issues once the election is over? Eric Smith, as a former politician, isn't that the type of advice that a candidate might be getting behind closed doors?
Well, first of all, I resemble that politician remark. I was a statesman trainee for 25 years. Never quite made the grade, but I got close.
I see. Okay.
I got to go back to the Jones Act.
we're back there now?
No. This is to paint a little tapestry here. When all of our representatives jumped on that, said, don't change that. This is key to Jacksonville. Well, Bishop was the only candidate that came out and said, hey, we need to be engaged in Cuba.
Yeah.
The others had to kind of dodge it. Mayor Brown came close to saying he would do it. Lenny said, since it's a communist country, we can't do anything with it, forgetting that this Vietnam and China and so forth. But Bishop has the guts to speak out. He's got nothing to lose. I think he gets 5% of the vote because he's first on the ballot. If he gets closer to 20 or 25, Peter Rummel and company panic. They switch their big money over to Bishop because they're afraid Couric could lose out.
Yeah.
Is that a crazy scenario? I'm asking you.
I don't know that they start pumping a bunch of money into Bill Bishop's campaign, but I think Bill Bishop has the more people hear him talk, I think his support's only going to go up. He's very smart and very articulate, and he has passion much more so than you see displayed from Alvin Brown or Lenny Curry, who
right.
are doing their level best to say nothing meaningful at all.
He has passionate supporters. I think the question, though, is that many? A big enough slice of supporters? When you look at the electorate as a whole for this March election.
Yes. I mean, the most important thing is he does have the passion, and he is really going to work hard to make this. He's been told for 6 months, Bill, you don't have a chance. Go away. And he's not going away, and he won't go away. And people are starting to really appreciate that doggedness and that he's showing.
549-2937. Let us know what you think about the Jacksonville mayor's race. Linda in Mandarin. Go ahead, Linda.
Good morning. I think that Mr. Bishop will bring what Americans would hope a third-party candidate would bring, forcing the candidates to actually talk about the issue. So I'm hopeful that we could get like a pre-March big heavyweight, actual interview with all of the guys and make them tell us what they really think. I know that's not really nice for politicians because most people, they feel like low-information voters. Unfortunately, I'm a political junkie, so I'm doing this stuff on NPR all day. And I'm just hoping that in lieu of Mr. Bishop being able to ask the gentleman directly, that the media at large will force them again and again. Thank you so much for the answer, but you didn't answer my question. Please let some answers because at this point, you know, I don't know that there's much difference in the two candidates. I just am concerned that Mr. Curry, you know, is a far stretch out there because he's not a politician who was the head of the Republican Party like just a few months ago. So I think that's a big Pinocchio nose for him. So please, Bill Bishop, if anything, can maybe bring some answers from the other two candidates, if nothing else.
Lots of tweets coming into the show about the mayor's race. Lenny Curry wants to win the first round. The question is, who will Bill Bishop pull votes from, Lenny Curry or Alvin Brown? Here's another tweet. The other two candidates keep refusing to debate prior to March. Although, as I mentioned, we are going to have a debate in March here at WJCT Television. Keith in Mandarin. Go ahead, Keith.
Hi, I'd like to talk about a couple issues. In most parts of the country, the party organization does not get involved if there's a primary. But I guess if they can maybe say they can do it here because it's a unitary election and they're not, I don't know. But anyway, that's my first opinion. The second opinion is on the Jones Act. And that is, that was a very interesting point that was made by the lady who grew up in Hawaii. So why don't they amend the law so that it doesn't apply to Hawaii? The third issue is Eric Smith talked about trade agreements that were beneficial to both countries. I went to the Graduate Institute of International Studies in Geneva, Switzerland, to study international trade and finance. and I took a class on international trade, and then I asked the professor, what is the outcome of free trade? And he said, the rich nations get poorer and the poor nations get richer. So if there are any trade agreements that we have entered into that have actually been beneficial to the U.S., I'd like to know what they are.
Yeah. Thank you, Keith, for that call. Well, people are paying attention.
You can go to Walmart and find out how they're beneficial to
exactly.
I mean, you know, come on. This country and the consumers in this country have benefited tremendously from much lower priced goods than they would have gotten otherwise because of these trade agreements. Now, have we paid a price for that? Sure have. Mm-hmm. A lot of jobs have been lost. But, you know, these trade agreements are have brought a lot of benefits to the consumers in this country.
I mean, I think you're right. There is a sort of cost benefit thing. There's also the fact that, you know, there's this old axiom in political science that no two countries with a McDonald's have ever gone to war with each other. You open up free trade and you make countries interdependent on each other, the conflict becomes less likely.
You know,
I think that benefits us all in the long run.
You know what's fascinating is the whole United States is a free trade agreement. So
yeah.
The question becomes, why couldn't you gradually expand this more in the world with people who play fair? You know, you can't have trade agreements if one side is cheating. But the other thing is, I got an idea for Bishop. Is it okay if I say it?
Sure.
Whenever you want to start debates, you get places, large, small, that'll have a debate. You invite the others. You bring two chairs. And you just talk about your... The media would certainly pick that
Clint
up.
Has Clint Eastwood's empty chair.
Actually, I think he's doing... there was one debate, I forget where it was at, that he was supposed to do with Curry and Brown, and Curry and Brown pulled out, and Bill Bishop has been adamant that he's going to show up.
Can I share a little anecdote with all of you?
Please.
4 years ago, when there was a debate here in our studios, at the last minute, Mike Hogan pulled out, and... there was a very spirited internal conversation, let's just say, between all of the television outlets who were participating, whether we should have an empty podium on mm-hmm. TV mm-hmm. to demonstrate that Mike Hogan was not coming. And in the end, it was decided not to do that.
Could I footnote the anecdote?
Sure.
Footnote. My program on Cable 99, I invited both Alvin and Mike to my program. Now, how much trouble can you get in 30 minutes, and I told both of them that...
I don't know, a lot.
Well, so Mike declines, Alvin comes on the program alone, you know. Yeah. Admittedly, I didn't do any horrible fast pitches, but it was a nice program, yeah. It wasn't scripted, and so that program aired different times of day for the next 45 days prior to the election.
Yeah.
He won by 1,600 votes.
Yeah. Right.
I'm claiming 800 of them.
Well, yeah, and you know, a week before the election, we had a debate here scheduled
right.
for TV between, and you were here, John.
Yeah, I was.
Between Mike Hogan and Alvin Brown, and Mike Hogan did not show up. So it ended up being a panel of journalists quizzing candidate Alvin Brown.
Which made Hogan look terrible.
And that's not going to happen this time, though. We have commitments from all of the major candidates.
And but you know, wasn't there a Twitter feed, Mike Hogan's
empty chair?
Yeah. Right. And I think it took on its own little life. That was a big mistake for him.
And if you remember back to this time 4 years ago, Alvin Brown was kind of like the Bill Bishop in the race. Nobody thought.
No one thought he wanted
to win. He's a Democrat, and you know, nobody thought. You know,
yeah, anything can happen in politics.
So 4 years ago, there's no Twitter.
Does Bill Bishop have a chance? Yes, he does. And if he keeps pushing the way he's going to make it a very interesting race.
And if you're just joining us, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, the most popular show we do every week. We try to do this for most of the hour these days because by popular demand, that's what we're doing. We want your calls at 549-2937. And if anything can happen in politics, I think it's fair to say anything can happen with the local sheriff's race. Let's talk about that for a minute. Yesterday, candidate Ken Jefferson announced he has the support of the Police Benevolent Association. Outgoing Sheriff John Rutherford is supporting Mike Williams. He has the FOP endorsement. There are seven guys running for this. Other names standing out in a crowded field are Jay Farhat and Jimmy Holderfield. Eye-popping fundraising totals in the contest for sheriff. The seven candidates combined have now passed the $1 million mark. This is going to be a free-for-all in March. I don't want to make any predictions as to who might make the runoff, but this is an important local race. Mark Woods.
Yeah, I think you just judge by giant signs in front of places and bumper stickers, it's clearly the one that's ramped up the fastest. As much as we're talking about the TV ads for the mayoral candidates and the flyers that started, it feels like the sheriff's race is way past that point already. I would not want to try and bet on who's going to win that one. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Eric Smith.
Well, I'm sitting here a little confused because the last time I heard the FOP had endorsed Holderfield and there was a brouhaha about that little election. Did they switch to Mike Williams while I was in China?
I apologize if I got that wrong. I think you're right about that, although Williams is the candidate that Rutherford is supporting.
Yeah, he's become the kingmaker. He's picked a sheriff. He's picked a mayor. Now he's running for the House. But that's I digress. Mm-hmm. I digress. It is going to be quite the race. From my view at street level, I think Holderfield has a kind of an edge right now. And you certainly couldn't discount Ken Jefferson.
Yeah, we've got five white Republicans running, two African-American Democrats running. It's an unlikely scenario, but pundits have emailed me about this, saying that it's not impossible to have the two black Democratic candidates make the runoff in this race, which would be unusual for Duval County. The two top vote getters go ahead to May.
Unitary elections are crazy things. And, you know, if you have five people all competing for the same pool, they're going to cannibalize each other's support. And, you know, if there was one black Democrat running, it would be a really safe bet that that guy would be in the runoff.
And here's a tweet from a listener. How about a discussion of the Civilian Review Board, cameras on cops, and community policing? Those will all come up, I hope, as we host these candidates, the ones that I can book to appear here in studio.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all learned this morning that all the crime in the inner city dates back to Roe v. Wade. So that was an interesting development.
You're talking about Sheriff Rutherford's talk that is on the front page of the Times Union this morning, Mark, where he talked about his pro-life beliefs and his plans possibly to run for the state house.
Yeah, it was some interesting farewell statements, and I've heard him talk about the death penalty before, how that his position has evolved on that based on his faith. And,
right.
He and Angela Corey and there was a panel involved, and actually Sheriff Rutherford had some very interesting comments about faith and violence and things. He did not bring up the Roe v. Wade one was a new one in this, but.
Well, he talked about that because of the vote in Congress yesterday, and there was a big march of anti-abortion folks down at the federal courthouse yesterday.
It was Roe v. Wade anniversary this week.
That's right. Yeah, that went on for about an hour, which really tied up Hemming Park.
And we do want to take a moment. Something tells me the phones are now going to light up as we discuss that deflated football controversy casting a shadow over this weekend's, or excuse me, next weekend's Super Bowl. Did you see this? Former Jaguars QB Mark Brunell got emotional on ESPN when he told the fellow commentators he does not believe Tom Brady.
I did not believe what Tom had to say. Those balls were deflated. Somebody had to do it. And I don't believe there's an equipment manager in the NFL that would, on his own initiative, deflate a ball without the starting quarterback's approval. I just didn't believe what Tom Brady had to say.
You seem pretty emotional about this.
Well, you know, it's disappointing.
That's Mark Brunell talking following the league's determination Wednesday that 11 of the 12 game balls used in Sunday's AFC Championship game against the Colts were underinflated. Give us a call, 549-2937, John.
What I don't get about this is whatever advantage in an underinflated ball, wouldn't it be the same advantage for both teams?
Each team brings like a dozen footballs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm assuming they know which ones, if allegedly the Patriots did this.
Right.
I'm assuming they know which ones are the ones that are underinflated. Right. So...
And Brunel's comments were interesting because he said that there's no way a quarterback, that their livelihood depends on these footballs. There's no way they wouldn't know exactly what was going on with these.
I believe that because you think about, you hear tennis players talk about the strings were 3 pounds, strung 3 pounds lighter, or a golfer. Little tiny things that you or I would never notice. I think if you handed us two footballs, one slightly under, we wouldn't. But I believe that. Completely what Mark Brunel said.
But not having all the facts, I got a choice between believing a Captain Ego and Captain Humility, and I believe Mark Brunel, Captain Humility. I'm rolling with him, and I've also got to wonder, as someone who knows very little about football, I love it, if it was 45-44, I would waste some emotion on this whole issue. Otherwise, I'm going to go back to the Ukraine and the girls that have been kidnapped in Africa and Ebola and worry about things like that and let this one just fly by. And I am aggravated. The media called it Deflategate. What in the heck were they thinking? Does anybody even remember Watergate? Well, is this lazy journalism?
I think everything is a gate these days.
It rhymes. It's
does the Jones Act apply to this?
549-2937.
We can only use footballs made in the United States.
Yes.
Eric,
sorry.
No
foreign football.
Eric on the South Side. Go ahead, Eric.
Good morning, Melissa. The pressure gauge may not have been properly calibrated. That's one issue. If the balls were deflated on the sidelines, film footage may show that. A ball boy could just put a pressure needle in the ball and maybe cover it with a towel and do it surreptitiously. So that's an issue as well. I'm no longer a football fan, and I go way back to watching Steve Spurrier play in the Orange Bowl back in the mid-late 60s, but the salaries and the $63 million scoreboard just don't make it too interesting for me anymore. Thanks for listening, Melissa, and keep up your good work.
Thanks, Eric. Ron in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Ron.
Good morning. I just want to say that Bill Belichick has a history of, cheating. So, I saw this yesterday on ESPN about how he just we said, no, I don't know anything about that. And so I think they're guilty. Do you know what kind of punishment they might get?
Draft picks, perhaps.
Yeah. Oh, really? Be punished that way?
Perhaps.
Okay. Yeah, there you go, Ron. I hope that answers your question.
Well, you brought this up as kind of a joke, right? And now we're getting into the serious calls about.
Yeah.
I didn't bring it up as a joke. I honestly didn't. No, okay. I mean this is a serious topic for football fans.
Well, I'll say it.
Although
it's a joke.
Let me just say I mean is it as serious as the allegations of players beating up their wives and girlfriends beating up their kids allegedly?
Turning into zombies 20 years after they retire because of brain damage.
Sure.
No, it's not.
I mean, this is the NFL. It's not the paragon of ethics. I mean, this is an organization. I mean, look at what they've done. I mean, just over the last couple of years, look at Dan Snyder up there in D.C. and that train wreck that keeps happening. This isn't an organization that is, should be held to the gold standard of, business ethics and professionalism, I don't think.
Now, let's talk a business story very quickly. Kroger, that's the grocery store I grew up shopping at in the Midwest. The Business Journal reports they are looking at buy low as a way to get into the Florida market. Could we see Kroger stores popping up around town at some point?
I got to say, I don't see it because I'll tell you why. Florida, when you're talking about the good quality grocer market, Publix has that wrapped up. Mm-hmm. And Publix does probably a better job with that than any other chain in the country. I mean, they're always number one on the consumer satisfaction list. So for another chain, and Kroger is basically a mirror image of Publix in terms of the clientele they want, to come into Florida and take that on, that's not going to happen.
Well, as a former grocery boy, I can tell you that there is a store that rivals, probably even Trump's Publix. It's called Ingles.
Oh, right.
I don't know whether they would come here, but...
Yeah, that is a good store.
I can't predict whether Kroger's coming. My crystal ball's in the shop, so I'll leave that to Ed.
And buy low, you know, buy low is losing the lower end of the market to Walmart and Walmart's neighborhood stores. So, you know... those are two big, powerful players in the state of Florida. I don't see them tripping up. And
so, what is Kroger's sort of end game here? Then, I mean, that's what I can't sort of figure out. What if you can't get in with Kroger, you can't get into that market. And if Buy Low is struggling so much against some of the discount chains, what's the opening that they're trying to fit into?
These rumors come up every 2 or 3 years about, and Kroger's been subject to these rumors before, that they're interested in Florida. Of course they're interested in Florida. Who isn't interested in Florida? It's the third biggest state in the country, right? It's getting bigger all the time.
And we keep hearing Macy's is coming to town, too.
The end game is Kroger probably stay markets it's in and just try to do as best a job as they can do there.
Mm-hmm. There we go. And finally, it's our weekly roundup of the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from across the state. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Okay, only in Florida do kids turn into real-life Doogie Howsers. A 17-year-old Florida teen decided to pose as a physician at a West Palm Beach hospital. He put on the white lab coat, face mask, and even had a stethoscope around his neck and walked around. Apparently, he was very convincing. Police say numerous hospital employees had seen him in the hall for weeks and just assumed he was a doctor. Finally, someone got suspicious and collared the kid. Aw. Only in Florida do Walmart customers get into a scuffle over weaponry. Hillsborough County Sheriff's deputies arrested a man Tuesday after he tackled another Walmart customer. 62-year-old Clarence Daniels told police he was simply going to the store to get coffee creamer for his wife when he was tackled from behind and wrestled to the ground. 43-year-old Michael Foster went after Daniels because he saw the gun in Daniels' holster under his jacket. Foster was arrested and charged with battery. It turns out that Daniels had a permit to carry. He's part of Florida's very large population of concealed weapons permit holders.
Yeah, but that only applies to white people.
And finally, only in Florida do world-famous celebrities join the force. Former NBA star Shaquille O'Neal is now a reserve officer in South Florida. Doral Police Chief Donald DeLuca swore Shaq in Tuesday. He will not receive his salary and will cover his own insurance, and he will commute to work from his homes in Fort Lauderdale and Orlando. Shaq will be doing community work, serving as a role model for kids. During his two-decade career, of course, he played for the Magic, the Lakers, the Miami Heat, Phoenix Suns, Cleveland Cavs, and the Celtics.
You know, there was when I was living in Orlando, there were these perpetual rumors that Shaquille O'Neal was going to run for sheriff.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I played with Spurrier at the University of Florida. He asked me what position I played. Clarinet. But we were there the same time and on the same field.
And here's an email or a tweet. Keep Eric Smith. His quips are almost as good as his experienced statesman viewpoints. So Eric almost. And the rest of the crew,
thank you.
Always so good to see you. Thanks for making this the most fun show we do all week. Thanks, guys. And we're back in a moment with our book club looking at race and reading in the River City.
Our expectations about each other,
blind people can't do those things,
profoundly affect the way that things unfold. So what would happen if we changed our expectations?
I can honestly say that I do not feel blind.
Could a person who is blind come to see? I'm Elise Spiegel, co-host of Invisibilia. Our next show, Expectations. Tune in.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world. Spend some time in The Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about The Square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to the Great American Songbook every Sunday night at 9 o'clock, only on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Night and day, you are the one. Only you neath the moon or under the sun. Whether near to me or far, it's no matter.
Welcome back. And finally this hour, our own State of the Reunion host Al Letson will host a town hall event next week at WJCT called Race in the River City. This event is sold out. It'll be a chance to have an open conversation about a touchy topic, race and our criminal justice system. So, in keeping with that, today's edition of the First Coast Connect Book Club is focusing on a book with similar themes and ties to Jacksonville. Our own Stacey Goldring is here now with more about Autobiography of an Ex-Colored Man by Jacksonville's own James Weldon Johnson. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, Melissa, I was listening to your show on Monday, and I had one of these moments, and it got me thinking. You know, I've been facilitating book groups now for over 8 years, all over the city and at the beach. A few months ago, we discussed this book. It was not easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's a book. It was published in 1912, okay? And it is it's a book that defies genre. It was written by James Weldon Johnson. And when I heard you and Al talking, I couldn't believe the similarities that I heard in his voice, his passion, and his words that were shared by James Weldon Johnson.
And he wrote those words 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Let me just read you a brief quote from the preface. In the preface, it says, "In these pages, it is as though a veil has been drawn aside. The reader is given a view of the inner life of the Negro in America." And then I'm not a Facebook person, but I went and I read the words that Al Letson wrote that evidently led to this Race in the River City discussion that you're going to do next week. This is what Al says, quote, "I must know the predominant culture. I must understand how the world works around me. But you, the predominant culture, doesn't necessarily have to know me. And if you don't know my life, what I've dealt with, how can you possibly understand how I experience the world, how I experience the construct of race?" You know, I challenge readers, I challenge the book groups of Jacksonville to get together and tackle this book. This is a book that has a narrator who has two voices. One, you could argue, is a racist black man.
Mm-hmm.
The other is the social commentator. What is he doing? He is speaking to the white reader, because in 1912, who is reading this book? Who has the money to buy this book? Okay. So it was James Weldon Johnson's attempt, the first ever in African-American history in America, to say to the white audience, this is what's going on. And he does not spoon feed it to you. He makes it very complicated. You're dealing with a narrator who wants to pass as white.
Right.
And so this is extremely controversial. This is not learning about race 101. This is getting into the thick of it. I am not black. I may be a minority, but I do not know what it's like to walk in a room and be defined in what literature calls a tight space, which is the definition of when a male who is black in a novel has to work within that construct of the social maze in which he's put in. And it is called a tight place. And this is where we have to navigate with our narrator explaining his journey, and then the social commentator who's explaining to us, the white reader, why. It's a very powerful book, very powerful. And you'll learn a lot about the people who you read with. You know, everyone brings their own thing to the table, right? We all have our baggage. When I facilitated the help several years ago, you know, you're from the North, I'm from the North, I'd like drag my jaw up from the floor and shove it back in my mouth when I heard how people spoke about their help.
People from the South.
Yeah. When we spoke about another book called Passing by Nella Larson, and all these books are on the website, it's about the Harlem Renaissance, about blacks choosing how to live during the Great Migration. You know, a lot of people went to Chicago and their struggles there. the one drop rule. You know, you have one drop of black blood, you're considered black. Do you know how many, do you know in what year the Senate finally passed an a federal anti-lynching law? Never.
Oh, really?
Yeah, never.
And you know, your book groups that you facilitate mm-hmm. are so powerful because what you do is through the discussion of literature, we all gain a better understanding of our shared history. And it's a window into someone's lived experience, which is so important. James Weldon Johnson, of course, Jacksonville's own, the author of many books, and of course the author of Lift Every Voice and Sing.
That's right. That's right.
And it's such a shame. And of course, there's a school in town named after
right,
Johnson.
That I knew.
But really, honestly, not enough has been done in
no.
this city to celebrate this incredibly influential
You're so right.
Author, activist, poet. And so in our own small way on this program, we're doing it through the book club, mm-hmm. as you decided today to spotlight Johnson's book, The Autobiography of an Ex-Colored Man.
And how relevant it still is today.
Absolutely. And we'll have more about the book club on our website. We do this every month with Stacy. We're going to continue discussing what we can do with the book club. So we welcome your emails about that.
Would love that.
At firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Stacy Goldring, always so good to see you.
Same, same. Thank you, Melissa.
And Diane Reams up next with her panel of journalists discussing the week's top national news stories. I'm Melissa Ross, and you've been listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.